United States of America. With an estimated population of over 312 million people and ever growing, you can understand why America sees itself as the leader in size, opportunities, population, development, and world setter. The country itself boasts a vast range of nationalities which have lived on American soil, some for a short period, and some for much longer. It's obvious when you walk down the street of many states that you see people from all over the world now residing in America. White Americans make up a large proportion of the overall population in America. But when looked back through family trees, many are surprised to see that their roots began abroad, most with family from Europe, the Middle East, and North Africa. They are past family members who left their home country and wanted a better life in the United States of America. Initially, the laws were quite lenient with people emigrating from around the world. But after an immigration boom, Congress passed legislation limiting immigration in 1890. To ensure this took effect, America had to do something to restrict and filter the people coming into their country. This was to be the birth of Ellis Island.
I'm Barry Moreno, and I work as historian and librarian here at the Ellis Island Immigration Museum in New York City.
And with the help of actors, we're going to relive the immigrants' journey to their American dream. But what was this American dream that so many dreamt of?
Oh, say can you see by the dawn's early light?
Most of it was to own your own property. Another thing was having a freer social life, less structured social life, because many of these people came from traditional societies where there were arranged marriages, people were born in a certain class and they were expected to remain within that class to work. Those kind of things freed people. They didn't want to do those things. And many people came here to get away from these kind of rules. And it was a struggle here, but they had a lot more freedom. Also, there's a higher pay scales, higher wages. Wages were very low, but compared to most of Europe, they were relatively high. Also, America, fortunately, was a very rich country in terms of resources. Also, immigrants were very creative. The ones who were very smart could create new kinds of industries here, which they did. But mainly, they had comfortable conditions for their family life, and that was the American dream for a lot of them, just to be able to be married, safe from war, safe from violence, and then your children can grow up and go to school and become doctors and lawyers and whatever, and which was not possible in some of these countries they came from.
Before they could get to these opportunities, they had to pass through Ellis Island, where immigrants were screened before they could go into America. The island itself has seen many changes during its life, and the uses it had include being used by the Army and Navy. Despite its overwhelming status, it was actually very small at the start of its life.
Going back to the War of 1812, they built a little fortress here. Just prior to that war, then the fortress was abandoned when peace came, no reason to keep it armed. It was only 3 acres in size. And then in 1890, a crisis emerged in immigration in America. The Congress decided that the federal government should control immigration and should introduce new inspection procedures. And the federal government knew that since 75% of the immigrants were coming through the port of New York, that this was the place to focus most of its energy on. And they had to select a place to build a facility for this. And they chose this little Ellis Island. And then quickly, the island was enlarged through landfill operations. This was America's biggest institution. About 30 buildings were on the island. The main building we're in today, it's got 4 towers. It's built in the French Renaissance style. It was built to imitate a railway station, an imitation of a Parisian railway station, because it dealt like a railway station. Ellis Island dealt with huge numbers of people pouring into the building for just a few hours and then pouring out of the building into boats to leave the island.
My family came to America from England around 1908. We left here from Southampton. My father arrived the previous year and was a mason, a stonemason. He had a job possibility in Cleveland. I remember getting the vaccination for the steamship before we left and trying to run away from the doctor. He caught me. I don't remember much about the trip. I was only 5 years old. We were only at Ellis Island for a few hours, but I do remember standing with my mother and 5 brothers on the boat as we entered New York Harbor for the first time and seeing the lights of the Statue of Liberty. It was early morning. I was wearing my knickers and a cap, and it was cold. My nose was running. I didn't know what was going on, and I remember looking at my mother after we passed through the inspection. We smiled and kissed each other because we had achieved this great thing, this rite of passage. Bob Hope emigrated from England 1908, age 5.
Getting to the island was not as easy as you and I can travel today, with the luxury of airlines that have comfortable seating and onboard entertainment. But there is one thing in common with today's travelling that we share with these immigrants from many years ago. The competition of the travel companies and the quality of how you would travel.
Like airlines today, the steamship lines were a huge industry. There were dozens of companies. And some of the companies were great companies, the greatest in size. The great companies were Cunard in England, White Star Line in England, and the two big German steamship lines out of Hamburg and Bremerhaven. Those were the four, the big four. So these companies had fare wars, so they would reduce the price. I think the fare wars, they say, finally came to an end about 1900 when there was a conference of these companies, and they agreed to keep, and it's hard to say, I mean, the equivalent would probably be to £5 or so, British currency, 1900, and US dollars, 25, roughly. But this is steerage fare. The cabin class, see, there were two other categories. There's cabin class. They were called cabin categories. First cabin and second cabin. First cabin was luxurious. Second cabin was medium class, middle class type. And then steerage was the cheapest. Steerage meant you shared a large dormitory space of about 25 passengers sleeping in this area. These companies sent commission agents all over Europe selling tickets for these steamship lines in competition with the other companies. Villagers were illiterate, but they would get them excited about coming to America. You could buy a ticket, and this is how long it takes and how much it costs. This was like a job opportunity to a lot of young men.
But these young men and families weren't going to just walk off a ship and through Ellis Island. For them, this was the beginning or end of their American dream. And they had to go through screening programs and interrogation. This could take hours for some who'd already experienced days on board a steamship. Immigrants were tired, scared, lonely, and overwhelmed.
Oh, I see that there are so many people here from so many different countries. Some from Italy, some from Germany, some from Sweden, some from Norway. I see, you know, all the different type of clothes they're wearing and some of the different foods some of them are eating. Also, I notice the variety of different languages these people are speaking. It's quite an experience. It's a little overwhelming for me. And to get a sense of what it's going to be like in this new country, I hope that everything will go all right when I go through the medical and legal inspection here and I can start a new life here in this country. Hopefully I'll have better opportunities here in the U.S. than I did back in Europe.
Immigration officers from Ellis Island used to climb aboard the ship before it was allowed to dock at the pier. The reason why the inspectors from here had to get the passenger list. Passenger list was a vital document because that was the paperwork that the immigration needed to get background before meeting the immigrant so they could find out if the immigrant was telling the truth or lies. Most of the first cabin were not immigrants at all. They were just foreign visitors, actors, writers, celebrities, diplomats. So you had them very politely interviewed and checked. Then they would do the second cabin. The other immigrants were, the vast majority, would continue into the Great Hall, into the registry room on the second floor, and then would be ordered into different lines. And there were these 14 different lines, sometimes as many as that. And there was an inspector at the top of the line, sitting at a rostrum desk or a podium desk. And he had 30 names per page, and questions across had all been filled in by the purser in Europe. All you do is now interview the person and see if the person gave the same answers to match this.
You know, as they lead us into the first floor, into the baggage room, You know, everybody is kind of anxious. They don't know what to expect here. You just have the one small bag. They just kind of move you along, send you up to the second floor. And if you have more than that, then they say you got to keep your stuff here on the first floor. Walking up these stairs is quite something. And I see these men in uniform up at the top of the stairs, looking over the balcony, and they're carefully looking at each of us as we come up those stairs. The immigration officials coming over and tell me, you, go over there, sit on one of the benches, wait there until somebody calls your number from the ship's manifest.
All of the people in steerage would be tagged, because that gave the number how they could find the match, the name up on the manifest page, the passenger list, and then undergo immediate medical examination by doctors looking for hundreds of diseases or conditions or illnesses. Anyone was chalk marked if they thought some sign of breathing problems or some kind of a eye problem, maybe like trachoma or something, or conjunctivitis.
Being chalked was not a good sign and would normally involve the immigrant being detained for further examinations. Chalk marks included H for heart, PG for pregnant, N for neck, and X for mental illness.
Number 25, Rose Meany, come up to the desk. Now, he's gonna read a whole series of questions from the ship's manifest. I'll have to respond to all the questions correctly. Otherwise, they won't let me into this country.
Then with red ink, he would mark this up. They didn't use fountain pens, they used steel pens, dipping pens, and they dipped ink. They actually were all rather colorful. The steerage pages were white, long white sheets. And he marked up the manifest as he interviewed the individual. He called the person. This is a very quick proceeding, and he didn't want to delay unnecessarily. He had kept family parties together. If anyone had been taken away by the doctor earlier, the doctor had to send a report, you see, accounting for the disappearance of that passenger. Also, the matron would send a report. The matron was there looking for prostitutes and unwed mothers. The inspector's the one that had the power, because the doctors just gave advisory information about certifying a person for something. It's up to the inspector to decide what to do with it, whether he can accept him or not. They had a whole crew of men hired as United States interpreters. These men were qualified by a civil service examination to be able to speak, read, write, and understand a certain language.
Bonjour, mesdames et messieurs. Bienvenue à Ellis Island. Guten Tag. Willkommen zu Ellis Island.
Now, of course, most of the people got out, and even the ones that were detained by the doctor eventually were released and were then inspected later by the inspector and were admitted. However, some people were detained by the inspector because the inspector was doubtful about their admissibility.
Becoming detained at Ellis Island could be a quick process for some, but for others, a lengthy one where immigrants could be detained for a month at a time. Women and children travelling alone were always detained until a male relative came for them. Penniless immigrants were detained until someone could bring them money or vouch for them financially with a bond. Ill people and pregnant women were often detained for hospitalisation, and criminals or other clearly undesirables were detained for immediate exclusion.
And the government had passed a series of laws that said that beggars and vagabonds and people with contagious disease or mental impairment or people who were immoral might not come into the country. So they also were looking for the problem about caring for immigrants who couldn't work. And in those days it was thought women couldn't work, so women were always under special scrutiny and couldn't often enter on their own. They had to have a husband or a brother or whatever responsible for them. And then also children and orphans and stowaways were also had to be dealt with, as well as old people. Also pregnant women, and to ensure the pregnant woman was wed and she was not unwed. An unwed woman was immoral and was immediately deported for the crime of moral turpitude. So we had about maybe 5,000 people a day in and out of the station.
With the amount of nationalities coming through Ellis Island, it was actually the British who had the easiest, most favourable experience of getting through. At one point, it was nearly passed that British citizens actually have their own entrance to and through the island to be away from the other nationalities.
They came here and they really objected to being herded with other Europeans, or with Europeans as it regarded them, and they regarded them to be inferior. So there were a lot of complaints. They complained to the British ambassador, to the State Department, to the Foreign Office, to other, whoever was in authority. Then the ambassador finally decided to make an inspection tour. His name was Sir Auckland Geddes. He was a Scotsman. He came here and he made a famous visit, now famous because he wrote a white paper on this that was published in the House of Commons. It was his assessment of Ellis Island. And he did give a stinging attack about the conditions here, which were appalling apparently in 1921 when he visited the island. But he did drop the demand that British should be separated because he saw that it was impractical. He said it would be preferable but impractical to put it into operation. So this became, you know, in the European capitals, it became known. Also, immigrants also heard about how terrible Ellis Island was. So it got a bad reputation. And even would probably get worse as years went on up until the closing, because even more problems emerged.
And more problems emerging was not good news for the island. A small place full of scared, lonely, stressed people, with many not being able to speak English, only added to the confusion and bewilderment for many. It wasn't long until this rumour was actually brought to life when unsuspecting immigrants received unfavourable treatment upon passing through the island and, using the power of their fame, shared information on the island upon their release.
Charlie Chaplin's mother, she was detained here for mental causes. Hannah Chaplin was an old music hall star of way back. And when the Zeppelin raids were happening over London in the Great War, she and a lot of people that were high strung were terrified of these bombings. But anyway, she had a nervous breakdown over there. And then when her son became this big movie star in Hollywood, he sent for her and she wound up being detained here. She was mentally, something was wrong with her, apparently, they thought. But, and I think she confessed of having had nervous breakdowns and things like that. So finally they let her in because Chaplin sent people here to pay the bond and get her off.
With the British receiving favourable attention and welcome, not all nationalities were welcome to the island with such open arms.
There's a lot of deep prejudice against foreigners in American society. And so America, in the days of Ellis Island Open, was predominantly an Anglo-Saxon country of English descent, people who had founded the United States, actually. So you had British America, basically. And British Americans, whose ancestors had come before the American Revolution, didn't think much of these newcomers in the beginning. They were suspicious of them. They realized they were beneficial to the economy and to trade and business, so of course they were anxious to have them here. The first brunt of real hatred was the Irish Catholic, who arrived in abundance during the famine years of the 1840s. Because they were Catholic, America was a Protestant society, they were received with considerable disdain and suspicion and hostility. They were considered the lowest of white people. They in fact, even would state that some of the people would offer advertisements that they'd rather hire a Negro than an Irishman. And these are stereotypes, but they really were widely talked about in the 1800s in America. Also, Germans are coming in huge numbers. But the Germans were better educated than the Irish. And the Germans usually weren't as sickly and didn't have as much poor and ill health on arrival. The Germans helped to transform American music. They introduced the waltz, which became a huge sensation and a rage, all the rage. Then, of course, the Italians and Jews and Poles started coming. Initially, they weren't welcome, too. So the U.S. began to pull into more of an isolationist pattern after World War I ended. And that included the introduction of anti-immigrant laws, which end mass immigration completely from Europe in 1924.
My father came to this country in 1914, and he could speak no English at all. When he came to Ellis Island and he was asked what his name was, he did not know what the question was. Standing by another lady who had come with him on the ship, they said to her, "Is this your brother?" I guess he nodded, and they put "brother." Eventually the H was taken off, and it was made into "Brota." I was born August 1911, possibly 1912, or even 1913. There were no birth certificates. However, my father had registered me in school as 1911. When he was in Russia, my father worked for a wheat farmer as a bookkeeper. He was very well educated in Hebrew and the Jewish religion. When he came here in 1914, he had been on the last ship coming to this country before communication was cut off. War was on and the factories were booming. And he made a good home for us, a two-family home that was in Toledo, Ohio. Sylvia Broughter emigrated from Russia, 1922, age 10.
This huge mixture of nationalities and the stories and rumours that circulated about Ellis Island only made immigrants more weary of going through the island. But they knew that this was the only way to get to live their new life. With many being detained for various reasons, the conditions and cramped atmosphere experienced once leaving the steamships meant that violence on the island was imminent.
This was an isolated site, and in which hundreds of people would spend the night in detention, and various degrees of security, depending on who they were, their case. You know, and then you had some people in the hospital, some people in the insane asylum and here on the island, or in the contagious disease wards, or the right general hospital. So you had all sorts of people being detained. Yeah, there were episodes of violence, I'm afraid. A lot of people wanted to escape. The vigorousness with which it was enforced was also a shock to a lot of people, because they were told some little thing would hold you back. It seemed unbelievable, you know, to people that here they had nothing wrong, or were one child, and their sisters being held, their brother. I mean, imagine you come with your brother and you suddenly see your brother has to stay here. We're going to have him under observation, but it's your brother. If you can't leave, because you came with him, you have to go to maybe Des Moines, Iowa. So a lot of immigrants with high hopes suddenly found themselves, their hopes dashed temporarily, and maybe it was uncertain, they didn't understand the laws, they didn't know what the Americans were doing. But yes, there were immigrants that would try to escape. There were fights here, there were these gate men, they were called gate men, these guards were called gate men and watchmen, and many were rough men. Immigrants also got in fights over things. Also, there were things they didn't know about, like they say there were sugar fights over the sugar bowl in the dining room. Ellis Island detainees would sit at dining room tables, and they were served by waiters in white clothes. They were not allowed to get up and go for anything on their own. It was forbidden. They were served tea, they were served stew, or whatever it was. And the food was American food. It was not European food. It was Anglo-American food from the English-American tradition. And those who came from Northern Europe, the cold region, they had never seen bananas. They had no idea how to eat it. And you have people who would start eating, and they'd have to be taught how to peel it. And then you had all, and also a lot of the immigrants had never seen the other races either.
Ellis Island also had to be careful, not just with how immigrants were treated, but also appreciate how the huge mixture of immigrants passing through the island would bring with them home religions and beliefs. Whilst in detention, ministers, priests, and missionaries who were volunteers would visit the island each day.
And they were immigrant aid workers, they were called. And they were from the YWCA, the Salvation Army, Women's Christian Temperance Union, the National Council of Jewish Women, the Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society, and of course the Roman Catholic Church had lots of priests here who spoke all the different languages. And there were a lot of fights about that, because the American Bible Society used to hand out Bibles, thousands of Bibles every year, to immigrants in the languages they spoke. And that caused controversy, because they would give out these Bibles to Catholics. And the Bible they gave out was translations of the King James Bible, which is regarded as heresy in the Catholic Church. As a result, they had to restrict who was given these Bibles.
During the war, another movement emerges known as the Assimilation Movement. The movement was a grassroots movement that put pressure on state legislators to pass legislation requiring immigrants to learn English and to go to citizenship classes. This was known as Americanization. Most of these anti-immigrant acts were something that began in New England and would then spread nationwide. 31 states had passed Americanization laws by 1921. There were certain organizations that were very pro-Americanization. The YMCA, the Young Men's Christian Association, were really enthusiastic about it and held classes in churches for foreigners in the community. Americanization was part of a negative reaction towards immigration that became very intense in the 1920s and through to the 1940s, and on Ellis Island remained until its closure in the 50s. The YMCA, however, was a very important organisation at the time for immigrant men and American men who had moved to the big cities and had no social life.
Fortunately, I was very truthful about all the answers I gave to the questions in Europe, so I wasn't going to have any problem getting through here. Oh, good, I passed the legal inspection.
So what was next for the immigrant once they'd passed legal and medical inspections?
Now I get to go down to the first floor and wait for the Ellis Island ferry over to Battery Park. Oh, I can't wait to get over to Battery Park and meet some of my relatives. My sister, Nora, who came here in 1911. She's gonna take me to some apartment near here where I can stay until I line up a job as a seamstress.
Obviously, you had a whole range of from success to absolute failure. Some immigrants wound up in jail, in prison, they wound up being deported, they wound up being beggars in the streets, they wound up dying of tuberculosis in a hospital somewhere, being killed in street violence someplace. There are a lot of problems in America. But most immigrants, when they got out of here, especially if they were men, they were on their way to work, to get some kind of job as maybe a common laborer, which was commonplace for Italians and Poles, Polish people and Irish people. So it only depended on what you could do. And immigrants went to communities. When they left Ellis Island, they went by train to communities wherever their people had settled. So you had huge settlements, say, of Germans in Wisconsin and Norwegians in North Dakota, for example.
I totally hear that.
You can't get over all the buildings in this city, how huge they are. And this park is something, all the shops and the people they have here. It's overwhelming. I'm a little scared now, how am I going to fit in?
The first 32 years of Ellis Island's history, 1892 to 1924, were the classic years when the Golden Door was opened with few restrictive laws. After 1924 to 1931, it was a lot harder for immigrants to pass into America with a new percentage allowance passed for each nationality. From there on, the US consulates abroad put this new system into full force, which saw a huge decline in immigrants arriving at the island, with figures of more than 1.2 million in 1907, now down to 25,000 in 1932. The visa application changed and all questioning and medical examinations were completed at American consulates abroad before a visa was granted to then allow them into America. In its final years, up to November 12, 1954, when doors were finally closed for its final time, Ellis Island was used as a detention place for criminals. And during the Second World War, thousands of Japanese, Italian and German enemies were detained on the island along with refugees. Over its span of 62 years as an immigration island, Ellis Island had over 12 million immigrants pass through its Great Hall for processing or detention. For many, their American dream stopped there and were returned to their home country on the next available steamship. But for others, it was the start of an exciting new life by themselves or with their family, where they would meet new people and experience a different way of life.
Well, from there, off they went to their American dream, and who knows what became of them in the future, but they had their high hopes. Many immigrants were amazed that they wound up changing their names or getting married to other people, and even winding up staying in this country where they at first had never intended to stop here.
The only experience I've had is living with small groups of people. Now I'm going to have to live in a city that's populated with millions of people from all different type cultures and religions. I wonder how I'm going to adjust to that. Well, time will tell.